Happy Friday, everyone. We have just a couple of announcements before we hop into our discussion today. First, for our readers and authors, next Saturday, April 20th, we will have another Coffee and Books event. Join authors Sarah Sundin, Jody Basie, and Karen Whitmire from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a live Q&A. Enjoy a lively conversation with your favorite coffee. You can register with the link on this blog post. And just so everyone is aware, this is a free event. You just need to register so that you can join us when the event goes live. And authors, I'm so excited. I just want to say thank you to Marlene, who reached out and asked if I could put on a conference. And I decided to dip my toe in the water here. And we are going to do our first HCRW online mini conference. And the registration for that opens today. We have three trainings over 3 days geared to help you build your author platform. So author Crystal Cottle will kick off the conference on May 7th with her session on how to plot a magnet reader. Learn how to leverage the power of Canva to create images for your website, social media newsletter, and more on May 9th with me. Then on May 11th, join author Misty M. Beller for a session building your email list. Each of these sessions are $17 for non-members and free for current HCRW members. You must have been a member on or before April 3rd to get free access to this conference. And then what's really exciting, each of those trainings are 1 hour long, very similar to what we do once a month. But then following each of those, we have 1 hour live small group sessions where you can work with the presenter. So you can spend an hour with Crystal Cottle plotting your magnet reader. And then you can spend an hour with Misty M. Beller creating a plan for building your email list. And then you can have an hour with me creating images on Canva. And each of these small group sessions, again, they're 1 hour and they are limited to 10 people. So be sure to sign up today because I have a feeling that those slots are going to go fast. The cost for these small group work sessions with each of our presenters is $47 for non-members and free for our current HCRW members. And I just want to reiterate, you must have been a member on or before April 3rd to receive the free seat in these sessions as well. You can learn more, get all the dates, the times, and the costs, and all of the details for each session at www.literaryscape.com/events. I'm hoping most of you can join us for at least one, if not all three, and I hope you find them helpful. I'm really excited to kind of just dip my toe in this online conference event. All right, now let's dive into this week's book discussion. Welcome to the Literary Escape Podcast, the only podcast that serves both readers and authors of historical Christian romance. We read, discuss, review, and rate books in this unique romance subgenre and sprinkle in a few contemporary Christian suspense books. Authors, we bring you inside tips and tricks from those who have gone before you. Then we bring both readers and authors together for fun-filled live Q&As. Literary Escape is the one-stop shop for both readers and authors to connect, learn, and grow together. Let's dive into this adventurous episode.
5 years after the final shot was fired in the war between the states, Lena Daltrey can barely manage to keep herself, her two younger sisters, and their spinster cousin fed and clothed. With their family's Mississippi plantation swamped by debt and the big house falling down around them, the only option seems to be giving up their ancestral land until a hotel management agent for the railroad offers her hope for the future. If she'll turn her home into a hotel, Levi Riggins says, he can all but guarantee it will be saved. Like,
Sayla
isn't sure she entirely trusts this handsome Yankee. Yet, what other options does she have? She'll have to stay on her guard, but she never expected to have to guard her heart.
Good job. Yeah, it is sorry. Weird. When they put in names we don't normally read. Like,
and
the
then when I have
book,
it in my head, like, the whole time I'm reading a different name.
Sayla. Actually, the guy shows up in the first book, but the second book, our hero in there, his name, we'll talk about that one later. Yeah. His name, I got confused on how to pronounce his name, but anyways. I had a fun note in that book. It talked about there was a porter on the train and their last name was Lunsford. And that was my mother's maiden name.
Oh.
I was like, Lunsford, you know.
Yeah, very nice.
All right. Let's talk about Sayla, Joelle, and Aurora's father. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw you.
Sorry.
So throughout the book, there's snippets from his perspective. And at times he seemed lucid, and at other times it's clear that he's not in his right mind.
Yeah.
But how did you react to Mr. Daughtry's character?
Gary?
Yeah.
Like you said, he was there sometimes, but you don't really get the whole picture, I feel like, till the end. Like, mm-hmm. you just, like you said, got the snippets or tidbits in there. But at first I was like, who is this person and who is this perspective? I didn't put the pieces together, I feel like.
Okay, good, because I did the same thing.
Until
and
later, I was like, who is hunting that? Because it seemed like I couldn't figure out if he was hunting Levi or Sayla, like, at first. Because it did say, and then because I think with the train incident, you're like, why would he try to do that to his own daughter?
Yeah.
Like, so, when all that came to.
Okay, good. Because when I first read it, I'm like, I don't understand what's happening here. And maybe she did that on purpose really, to kind of keep you in the dark for a while. And maybe just to show how messed up he really was.
Yeah.
But what was your response to the circumstances that pushed him over the edge? It was on page like 147, where he just kind of like totally lost it. See if I can find it. Says he half rose, moved to squat in front of the bigger headstone just a few feet away. Sweet Penny, red-haired, fiery, filling him with pride of possession. Though it was she who owned Jonathan Daughtry's marrow and blood, from the minute he saw her standing at the top of her father's stairs, glowing like the sun at noon. He built Ithaca as his act of silent worship, bought the piano because she missed her music, imported a desk from Italy because she needed a place to write her invitations, paid for endless dinners and dances that he despised because she adored making others happy. He'd tolerated the girls' fripperies because they each, in myriad ways, reminded him of her. He laid his hand on the frosted ground at the base of her headstone, sorrow reaching the bottom of his soul and wringing it dry. How was it possible to miss someone so much after so long a time? Where was God that he could turn a blind eye to one who represented everything good and pure in the world, condoning this blasphemy? He fell to his knees and sobbed. So I feel like that was the moment that kind of pushed him over the edge. I don't think he ever came back. I think that was like his last lucid moment in the book. So how did you react to that? Because in general, before then, I was like, you're a terrible person.
Yeah. Yeah, it was heartbreaking, I think, at that point. And then he had a son, too, right?
At that point,
we found out about, that we didn't know about.
And he didn't even live maybe like 3 days or something.
Yeah, so that was heartbreaking.
And then
you could see why he kind of snapped, I guess.
Yeah.
But
what happened to his wife
was terrible.
Isn't that what I feel? Do you feel like that's what made him snap? But then going back to her grave just like was the final.
Yeah. And then when he kept seeing his daughter who looked like his wife, I think that kept pulling him back into the past and not
he couldn't distinguish anymore
between them. Yeah.
Yeah. I did feel bad about that because I can only imagine how a man would feel knowing that how his wife died. and that he wasn't there to protect her. So I can definitely see that breaking his mind for sure. But, and then I felt bad for the girls.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to some other stuff. It's not all sad. It's just his character.
There's a lot.
Yeah. That comes from him and what his choices were. And I know people condemned him for some of his actions after he received the news of what happened to his wife. But at the same time, I can also justify them for him. Mm. Some of the where he just lined guys up and shot them. But they were also doing
that things to other people.
Yeah,
right?
those things to other people. And he was like, couldn't stop it for my wife, but I will for others. Other but yeah. I mean, I get like he totally
he was taking justice into his own hands. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so Joel and Selah are having this discussion, and Joel asks, do you want to get married one day? And Selah responds by saying, not unless I can find a man I can't boss around. Okay, I had to read that twice because it's not what we hear anymore these days. She says, not unless I can find a man I can't boss around. What did you think about that?
I loved it. Because in that day and age, her age in itself was like, you're not going to get married. But I love that. She was so sure of herself, you know, and I love that.
Yeah, she had a lot of confidence and she knew she needed a man that was going to keep her in line too, right? And not let her rule the roost because that's not how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And I know it's really hard. It's our humanness that makes this so hard. But also just culture today is so woman power power. Like, I feel like we got that since we were kids, like all through the 90s and everything. But there's so much freedom in just letting him lead.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, but there's also freedom when you wholly and completely trust
the person you're with.
Yes.
I think that's the difference. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's different than because when you can't, then you do feel like you have to take on, you know, a lot.
Yeah. So I just loved that. I was, mom was supposed to join us today, but she got sick, poor thing. So,
I would have loved to hear her perspective.
I would have too. That's what I was going to say. I was really looking forward to hear mom's perspective because it's just a different generation too for her. All right. So Joel and Selah lean on God in prayer. And Selah says, this is on page 122. She says, dear Father, Joel and I need you right now. It's such a great reminder of how we need to turn to God in everything. And it reminds me a lot of the characters in the Dive Team investigation series that we discussed last month. Did you get to read that series at all?
I read the series. Yeah, I just couldn't make it to the discussion. Okay. But I did like how they were all, you know, they turned to God and pray and about everything. And I loved it. Mm-hmm. I was telling my daughter that she doesn't normally... I know she has a different reading scope than I do.
Yeah.
I was like, you should read these books. You would really like them. She's like, Mom, I don't like your lovey-dovey books. I'm like, these weren't lovey-dovey books. Like, these were kind of, like, scary.
Is that like, what she likes?
Sometimes, yeah. She likes a lot of different variety, but, she likes the mystery and the...
Suspense
more than I do.
Oh, she would love those books,
then. Yeah, that's what I said.
Maybe I should suggest them to her. Sometimes
when it comes from me, it's not cool. You know?
I know. I get that a lot. Like, but somebody else does it and you're like, oh gee, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know.
Well, story of my life. Time, though, like, most of the time for me, I'm the one they listen to. Well, yeah, Melissa said I should.
Right.
Well, I just told my sisters are like, I'm like, hey, just tell me what you want them to do. I'll turn around and tell them to do it. And they'll do it.
That's funny.
Kids, they crack me up. All right, then there's all these conversations I really like. Selah's having a conversation with Mose and her Horatia. Is that how you said her name?
Horatia, yeah.
Okay. Mose says, it'd be good for us to wrestle with bitterness, throw it off to the pit of hell where it belongs. Horatia responds by quoting scripture, be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. And Selah heard that scripture in a new light as she realizes she has allowed the yoke of guilt and anxiety to drag her down. So could you relate to Selah in this moment? So let me just back up for anybody who hasn't read the book. Mose and Horatia used to be slaves for her family on that plantation. Mm-hmm. And they stayed around. And did she give them a house on the plantation, or do they have a house? I feel like she gave them a house on the plantation.
Yeah, to stay.
Right?
Yeah.
And they've stayed and helped. They are awesome. They mm-hmm. become more and more involved as they go through the series. So when she comes back, this is when she comes to talk to them about, would you work for a wage mm-hmm. to help get the plantation turned into a hotel and all that good stuff. And Horatia's kind of like struggling with this whole, is this going to turn into what it was before, bondage yeah. again? But then Selah's perspective so different, because she never liked having slaves. Mm-hmm. Her dad really got on her about that's their, you know, she was younger, because she tried to speak up for it and say it wasn't right. And then that didn't go very well for her.
Yeah.
So she struggles with this guilt of I should have done more to free our slaves before even the war started. I don't know. Can you relate to her? I can relate. I have a lot of anxiety and guilt sometimes that weighs me down, and I have to say.
Yeah. I know. Me too. Yes. And you have to just pull yourself out of it.
Like, yeah.
Like, I don't know. Sometimes you have to just do, I don't know. I've learned to like set a timer if I'm like really down, like, and be like, okay, you get 2 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever I feel like I need. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to put it away, you mm-hmm. know.
That's a good strategy. I've not done that before, but yeah. a lot of times I'm like, Lord, just take it away, because I know this isn't coming from you. The enemy likes to always yeah. pull up our past sins and rub them in our face to get us down, and I'm like, shut up and go away.
I know you want to like bury it sometimes, though. I feel like you have to acknowledge it and then like then put it away, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, allow yourself to feel it and then get it away.
Yeah. No.
You let yourself address it and then
deal with it. Yeah,
but not for very long. Like, you mm-hmm. have to address it, but there's other things you need to do with your day and your time and your energy that don't need it. So
yeah.
that's where I've gotten better. Like yeah. as I've gotten older. It's I like good. To think I have.
The
I don't
other
know,
thing, but. Like, and I love how Moses, like, you need to just throw it down to the pit of hell where it belongs. Because mm-hmm. the other thing is, you need to address it and you need to confess it. Mm-hmm. Once you confess it and God has forgiven you of it, it's gone. Right? Mm-hmm. He doesn't remember it, right? It's just hard for us to let it go, but I think it's more the enemy likes to constantly remind us. Remember when you failed? Remember yeah. when you failed? And you have to just say, okay, Jesus, can you just squash him right now?
Like, right.
Cut him up.
I acknowledge it. I repented. We're moving done. Forward.
Like, you have yes. to speak back. Like, yes, I you did, have to
remind,
but you know what?
You have to remind yourself, there is a reason. Mm-hmm. This is not, it's done.
It's done. Over. It's over.
Yep.
He's watching
I'm
away.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
See ya.
Put it in the box and close the lid and throw it in the fire.
That's right. Okay. I have to read this little section because this really blew me off. Do you remember when their grandmother came? Like, she suddenly is like on the scene.
The grandmother cracked me up throughout. She like always had impeccable timing too, I felt like, throughout all three books.
I didn't like her at first.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I didn't.
Well, because you did get the sense from the older two girls' perspective of she's this uppity, uppity lady, you know, that they stuck the little one with. But
I know.
Yeah.
Poor Aurora.
But she turned out to be pretty funny, I thought. I like, by then, especially the third book, I was really liking her.
I liked her in the third.
Yeah.
The first, I didn't like her at all. The second, no. I was like, maybe I can like you. The third, I'm like, okay, I like you now. I felt like she changed. I don't know.
Even though she like said, her actions never really matched her words, I feel like, because she helped with the hotel. She got down yeah. and she scrubbed, and she, even though she knew that's not what she wanted for the girls, mm-hmm. she still, I feel like her action showed that she still believed in them, I guess.
Yeah.
That's where I was going with her.
Okay, well, you were much kinder than I am. I'll read this little part, because this is the part that I think turned me off on her at the beginning, is her words towards Thomas Ann. So she asked Selah, well, where is the pretty one and my pathetic niece?
Oh,
so she was asking, where's Joelle? And then my pathetic niece, which is Thomas Ann.
I guess I didn't catch that.
Thomas Anne responds with a quivering voice, and Grandmama turns to her and says, Isn't that like you, Thomas Anne, creeping up on one in the mousy fashion, in that mousy fashion? How a woman your size contrives to be invisible defies all laws of nature.
I guess I liked it. I don't hear that part. Read that part. Okay. Like that.
So I was like, I don't like you.
I think
you.
There's a story, though, behind Thomas Anne that we're not aware
there
of.
There is.
Is there another book I'm not aware of?
No.
Okay.
The story is in the third. Her story comes out in the third.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
But at the same time, I thought that was harsh.
Like, I could see why you have that.
Yeah. I didn't like her. At that point, I'm like, I just thought, how could you say that to and my pathetic niece and a woman your size? I don't even know how you can contrive to be
all
invisible.
Right, bad grandma. Get back down and start scrubbing.
That's right. She deserves to be scrubbing after that. But then that's where I feel like her character changed. I don't know if her character changed, but she was not consistent through the series. So she really befuddled me.
Yeah.
Grandma really befuddled me. I have a grandma. I only have one grandma still alive, but she's very loving and I've never heard her say a bad word about anybody. Anybody. If anybody starts talking bad about someone, she'll just go, oh, I didn't know that. And that's it. Like she never says anything else. Sweetest thing ever. My mom's mother, she was nice too, but she was a lot. She was okay. Just so everyone understands the difference. My mom's parents were like 2 years older than my great grandmother on my dad's side.
Okay.
So there was definitely a generation gap between, because they didn't have my mom till they had my aunt and uncle. And then they had my mom when grandma was like 40, I think, because the empty nest, she didn't like it.
Aww.
And she's so they had one more, but she's 16 years younger than her brother and 14 years younger than her sister. So there's a huge, she's the same age as her, not the same, but really close in age to her nieces and nephews.
Yeah.
So that's why there's such an age gap there. But so she was very proper, kind of like this grandmother. We had to wear, when we went to stay at their house, I like sleeping in sweats and a sweater. We all did. But we had to wear nightgowns because girls don't wear sweatpants. Right?
Yeah.
If we went out places with them, we had to wear a dress. I mean, like, there was just all these things. You couldn't have red nail polish. You didn't have red lipstick. Oh. Like, it was just very different with her. My grandpa, though. Anything you want, he spoiled us like no tomorrow. Whatever you wanted, you got. If you're like, Grandpa, I really want this. Okay, we will get. But Grandma was always like, and you're going to sit right. You're going to sit up in your chair. You're going to put your napkin in your lap. I learned a lot of etiquette from her.
Yeah, which I'm
thankful for. But as a kid, I was like, I just want to run around and play in my pants.
Right.
I just want to wear pants. But it was always, you are a young lady. And that is not appropriate.
Yeah.
So I get that part. Anyways. All right. I love this sentence that Sayla says to Levi, especially in light of certain people wanting to edit or erase our history to meet their agenda. She said, history always matters because it impacts the present and the future. Any thoughts on that?
Very true. I mean, I think we've heard it since we were little.
Yeah.
We didn't know the past to understand the future and where we're going. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because history always repeats itself.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can just read the Old Testament and you, over and over with the Israelites, you're like, seriously?
I know.
Didn't we just do this?
Right. Just a different day.
Like, how many generations down the road? You're just repeating what they did already. And I always get so frustrated. But then I'm like looking at us going, still doing that.
It's true.
You can't erase it. And you can't change it. You can't. Okay. I'm not going to lie. I'm a teacher. I've watched it through curriculum, how they have changed history and facts and they've taken people that actually did great things for us here in America and turned them into villains. Mm-hmm. I've watched it happen, and I've had to stop and go, what? Okay, guys, let me come back. Let me just show you the truth behind this, because this is written to someone's agenda and perspective. And you have to teach our kids that now.
Yeah.
To understand the difference. But
yeah, I miss when there was just like facts.
It's just facts.
Like, why do we? Yeah.
And that is what teaching is. When you're teaching
it's
what history.
It's supposed to be. It's supposed to be facts. And history shouldn't change. Like, it is what change. It is.
Yeah.
Like,
but I always say, you've got to know your history, like you said, otherwise you're going to repeat it. It's going to be a mess. So I love that she put that line in there. Impacts the present and the future. It's so true. All right. So Levi, on page 315, he's trying to survive, do his job, and make sure Selah isn't hurt. I felt like this poor guy was stretched.
Really?
Our
thin.
Hero was really stretched. His thoughts were, most likely he was going to kill the father of the woman he loved, on top of feeling like he was responsible for her mother's death. What did you think of Levi and the weight of responsibility that he carried? And guilt.
Yeah, the guilt from, yeah, that whole first situation. I was glad that was in there to, like, she did a great job on the beginning, the prologue. Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Each story, like, I felt like gave us a little background. It was nice to have that. But yeah, when that whole scene happened, I was like, holy cow. And then when you realize it was, oh my goodness, and what really happened, what a good guy he was, and tried to be.
It took Selah a long time to put those pieces together too.
Kind
of surprised me a little bit. I thought she would, like,
I got it right away.
I did immediately. But she, of course, that's the way she was written to not get it right away. I love Levi. I absolutely love him. I liked all of the guys in here in the series for different reasons, but I felt like he carried the biggest burden of all the heroes in this series. Just from that right there.
Yeah.
So I'm glad it all worked out for him. And he takes on her family, like her sisters are his sisters. He does
and
such
all
a
of
good
his
job.
Future brother-in-laws.
Oh, yeah. He's just a great, like, head of the house. Like,
yeah,
really,
he really
to step
is,
in.
Yeah.
Because he and Selah are, like, the head of that family now. And I thought he was perfect for it.
Yes.
He does a really good job. And I love this, where Levi shows Selah what he wrote in his notebook on the day they met on the train. And it said,
oh, I know. That was so sweet.
It says, like, I have found the woman I'm going to marry.
Oh, I know. That was sweet, because he got distracted, but it saved his life.
It
right?
did,
like,
yeah.
And that whole, I won't give away all the stories, but I was like, oh.
I love that. It reminded me of my grandpa.
Yeah.
Because he went on a double date. I think it was his friend, like his best friend, and grandma was his date, and they went skating. I don't know all the details. I just know that he said, I went home to my parents and said, I found the woman I'm going to marry.
Aw.
I was like, that's just like grandpa. It's so sweet. That's so sweet. But, and of course, they were married for many, many years. So, it reminded me of their stuff. I thought, it's actually kind of fun to hear
stories
about how people met and fell in love. It's just, some of it's really funny and some of it, it's just so sweet. So, all right, how would you rate the following elements of a rebel heart? The romance level.
Mocha.
I was going to go mocha too, because there wasn't a lot of action, but there were a lot of thoughts of, like, I really want to.
Right.
You know, but there wasn't. It was just the thoughts. There it was very rare that they acted on anything.
Even I feel like in the later books, they didn't really.
They
had closed door scene.
Yeah. What about the suspense level?
There was a latte, I feel like, suspense.
I would go mocha latte, for this. Yeah, you know what there were? Because there's a latte.
There was the train. There was all the stalking
shooting,
in the woods.
The stalking.
while they're trying to put the piece. I don't know. My level of suspense is different than yours.
I know.
I just have a little bit. I think it's a lot.
I know. That is true. So I would say probably middle of the road.
Yeah.
Mocha is probably where we're at.
I'll meet you there.
We'll it's probably the same for action too, don't you think?
Yeah. I would
say mocha, wouldn't you? Yeah. How about the mystery?
Mystery? There was mocha.
Mm-hmm. There's one main case that goes throughout the whole series. Mm-hmm. And so that mystery just keeps carrying on and building, carrying on.
Yeah.
How about the drama level?
I feel like there was a lot of drama. Latte?
Yeah. I think there is more drama in these books. I don't know if it's just because you're dealing with the dynamics of the family. I think that's what it
family,
is.
Family,
the dynamics of the
and
family.
And the townspeople sometimes. They have a lot of drama.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Those townspeople.
They weren't very good townspeople. At first, I thought they liked the girls, and then they turned. I don't know.
They don't. And they're
weird.
Catty, and they're real, like, very small town. Very close-minded, too. But, you know, I also have to remember their way of life was just annihilated.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're trying to
adjust
as well. So I just give them some grace there. What about the inspiration level?
Mocha.
Yeah.
I feel like there was some scattered throughout, but.
Mm-hmm. But not near as much as like Lynn H. Blackburn's her dive team investigations.
Yeah.
I put a latte on that
because
there was so much in there. And I always think Julie's lessons are always packed. Mm-hmm. Those are like my, you know, after you read, you go, okay, let me compare it to another series. And
say,
here's where it's at. What is your overall lasso rating of A Rebel Heart by Beth White?
I'm going to go 3 lassos. I really liked it.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go like 2.5. I liked it, but I had trouble getting into it at first and then staying in it, I think was my problem. But I'm now, just to say, I also had another series I was in the middle of reading that had a lot more of the suspense and the romance. So I was, you know
comparing,
me.
Comparing, yeah.
I tend to go, okay, let me go back to that book.
Yeah. So, this series, too, you have to read them in order.
You do.
Instead of, because I tried to go 1-3. For reasons.
Well, sometimes in a series,
and that you can. But it was really hard to follow 3 when I was jumping from 1-3. Like, I was like, it was really hard.
Yeah.
And I'm
it's because
the
library didn't have book 2 for you, right? So you were like,
I was like, trying. Well, I had it and I didn't get it read in time.
Oh.
So I had them all 3 on hold or in my book, and then it went on. Then it went out automatically because there's people waiting for it.
Oh, shoot.
And then there were 2 people at home that I had to wait for.
Well,
luckily
they
returned
read
it early.
Fast.
Yeah, they read them fast, or otherwise I would still be waiting.
Oh, my goodness. I don't even have my Libby app anymore, but anyway.
I love it.
I do like the Libby app.
I was going to go on Amazon and do the
Kindle
if I could not get it in time. I would get it, but I kind of wanted to. Darn it, I just should have read them early.
Yeah. So overall, great book.
Great book.
Great book. And we'll get into the next one next week. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, please consider sharing our podcast. Every share helps us reach more readers and authors like you. Until next time, happy and blessed reading and writing.